Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top five sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. 5 at 5 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Is Jose Quintana the best pitcher in Chicago? If not, who's better?
You could argue maybe that John Lester, if he were healthy, would be a better pitcher. But really, it's an empty argument because Quintana owns this town, both sides. He's great on the South Side, all-star, a lot of fans over there, goes to the Cubs, and is even better. So best pitcher in Chicago by a mile right now. It's not even close. I don't think there's, again, if you want to give John Lester some career award, go ahead. I planted this question in large part because I want to hear certain people answer it and begrudgingly admit that they're delighted with Jose Quintana.
I want people to remember how they feel about Jose Quintana this morning and how they felt last night watching him, because there will be a time, maybe not that far away, when people will doubt him again. And this is what he's capable of. This is what they traded for. This is the guy that they need to see more of. This is the first time since 2014 when he was wearing another Chicago uniform that he put back-to-back seven-inning or more starts with shutouts, and he went that deep into games and was that effective. 18 strikeouts to one walk in over his last 14 innings. This is dominance. When you saw him strike out Starlin Castro with that changeup, you saw the command and confidence he has in that third pitch. That's what he was working on in spring training. When he takes it to the next level during the regular season, even though it's against the Marlins, you're just glad from a Cubs perspective that he feels that confident. He did look different. He did look like a guy who knew what was going to happen when he let go of the ball. That's great to see. That wasn't the guy you saw in Milwaukee when he gave up 8 runs in 3 innings, but that guy looks like the exception. This guy looks like the rule, and that's great for the Cubs to see.
Yeah, he was also terrific in a...
Bears.
He was also terrific in relief this year in one game, in that strange situation where Yu Darvish came out after 2 2/3, and all of a sudden you look out, oh, it's Jose Quintana coming out of the bullpen. We're doing this already. He was really good in that as well. So two great starts.
October starts in March.
That's right. I am not over, though, the 8-run game that you mentioned, David, the April 5th game in Milwaukee, 3 innings and 8 runs, because there's been way too much of that throughout Jose Quintana's tenure with the Cubs. I want to see White Sox Jose Quintana. We have yet to see it for an entire season. Two great starts. I guess to answer the question, yeah, right now he's probably the best pitcher in Chicago, but I got to see a whole lot more from Jose Quintana. Good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, man?
What a joy to have Mark Brody.
It's so good to be here.
I loved your 40-minute transition with the grabber this morning. That was
He's
nice
lovely.
Of you to push him across the finish line.
Nobody
there.
Else does it for him, you know? Uh-huh. Somebody's got to take care of him.
He might miss you more than we do.
He sees me and come on in right now. It's like, I got to hide.
Hey, misses, have you heard that 4 o'clock hour? I love Jose Quintana. Don't get me wrong. Mully, you bring up a lot of good points. You know, when he was with the White Sox, he was excellent. He also gifted the White Sox Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez indirectly. So I appreciate him for that as well. I like seeing him go out and dominate like he did last night. But this is recency bias taken to a whole different level, is it not? I mean, I know John Lester's injured right now. But until John Lester gets knocked off the top of the mountain, until somebody takes that heavyweight title from around his waist, this is John Lester's city. He is the guy that's been through all the battles. He's brought Chicago the World Series.
Is this John Lester's city, or is his city Boston? got to ask yourself that question.
Chris Sale City is Boston, and look how that's working out for him now. World Series hangover. I want to see Quintana do more of this. Mark, you bring up a good point. The consistency is one thing that has kind of failed him from going from the south side to the north side. You haven't seen as much reliability in him. But if he gets on a good streak and he does have the changeup going like he had last night, like we saw during his best years in Chicago, he can be right up there in the conversation. And maybe in a couple months, if he keeps this up and Lester falters a little bit or he's not back from injury, whatever may happen, you could probably make the argument at that point. I just think it's a little early quite yet. Although it is funny to me that, you know, going into the season, Quintana was almost like an afterthought in this rotation, and he's been the best one of the bunch so far, with all due respect to Cole Hamels, who we'll see tonight.
All right, Molly, I'll bite. Absolutely. Jose Quintana is doing things that I didn't expect him to do, especially unless it was the Milwaukee Brewers, and Mark mentioned that. So that's why I'm not going to say Quintana's the best in the city right now, because of the stinker north of the Cheddar Curtain. But last night, he had a look about him. He was in complete control. He was walking around. He had a little giddy up. He looked a little taller in his cleats. He just looked over at that dugout and said, I am not letting that double A, triple A, minor league baseball lineup get the best of me. But Cole Hamels has been awfully good too. He's had one kind of a stinker, not quite as bad as the stinker that Quintana had, but he had a stinker as well. And if he goes out and doesn't give it to the bullpen early, if he goes another eight innings, right? I mean, he might be in line to be the best pitcher in Chicago right now. Listen, if Carlos Rodon could put a couple in a row together, he'd be. But again, this guy, the highs and the lows, right? Who's pitched like the single best game this year in Chicago?
Giolito.
Well, right.
I mean, really?
Probably Quintana after last night.
But the problem is, and you know, I'm a big proponent on you can only talk about the team that they faced, but I can't get too high on Quintana because that's such a bad. This is why I said the Cubs have to sweep this series. And you got the open of the show as part of yesterday. Two out of three is not good enough. Okay. So the best pitcher by tomorrow could be Hamels. Right now, maybe Quintana.
So, next question.
Are you okay with Kyle Schwarber sitting two straight games against right-handed starters?
No!
Are the Cubs better with David Bodie in the lineup than Schwarber?
Bears.
How far down the list of Cubs left-handed hitters do you have to go to get down to Schwarber?
I'm a little surprised to see him on the bench two straight games because I thought these were lineups that were not related to performance and they were kind of premeditated and predetermined by Joe. Remember that beginning of the series? You're going to say who starts with what game, and I can't imagine that they planned initially going into Miami against the Marlins and having Kyle Schwarber sit on the bench for the first two games against right-handers. But he's coming into this series two of his last 24 with nine strikeouts over his last six games. Yeah, he started hitting .286 over the first eight, but he has not been that hitter since. He does not look comfortable. His whiff rate against all sorts of pitching has been bad lately, and that's a concern. You look at the Cubs lineup, and you've got Rizzo, you've got Jason Hayward, who you think has been more consistent. You'd rather see him at the plate from the left side than Kyle Schwarber. Descalso has been pretty clutch. You see guys that have surpassed him in terms of trust, and that's a concern because for the Cubs to be the Cubs, and they have looked like the Cubs again in winning five out of six, but you need to see Schwarber come through in big moments. You need to see him in the lineup. David Bodie, yeah, I mean, I'm the biggest David Bodie guy there is, but I don't know that overall they can say that they're better with him in the lineup consistently. And this has got to be a short-term blip for Kyle Schwarber in order for the Cubs to kind of realize, I think, their full potential this year.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I guess when you think about Schwarber, he's really struggling right now. But that doesn't mean, you know, it's a very complicated issue, Kyle Schwarber, because you really feel they would not have won the World Series had he not come back that year and all that he did in that unbelievable stretch of games and, you know, just going out and hitting and working on his recovery and coming back like a knight in shining armor. And you know, he was Babe Schwarber, and there was this legendary feeling. Then he goes off the boil and starts struggling in his career. I don't know where we're at with Kyle Schwarber. I think that he was kind of Paul Bunyan at one point, and you just thought that there was more myth than there was man to the whole thing. I don't know where we're at with him, but I am surprised that there isn't more of an effort on the part of the whole organization to keep him in the lineup and to keep building him. It just seems like there are certain guys that have gotten more than the benefit of the doubt, that have been locked into positions based on other reasons and have now started to blossom a little as a result. I would not throw away Kyle Schwarber. And he's a guy that I trust a lot more than you're letting on now. But I'm not just looking at the numbers. I'm looking at the entirety of the picture of what this team could be and will be and all that. And I was surprised when he wasn't playing earlier in the year just because he's a good defender. And he's made himself that. So now he's struggling at the plate and you can't play him. I don't agree with that. I think that they've had success sticking with guys and fighting through these things, and I think they ought to do it with Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, he was Paul Bunyan, and then he became a leadoff hitter 2 years ago.
Oh, my God. I mean, think about that.
Brody.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Never quite made it back from that, did he?
He never did.
No. Joe poisoned the well.
Right. When was it last year they set him down? I'm getting my years all crammed.
2 years ago.
Was it
17. Ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was not at all last year. I think the Cubs actually think they know what he is now, and that it's a guy that, like, I'm totally okay. Do whatever you have to do to get the best out of Kyle Schwarber. And unfortunately, I do think it is him being a guy that plays 4 out of every 7 games. It's sort of like the way in the last couple of years that Joe Maddon has handled Albert Elmora Jr. And there's been so much outrage, like he should be an everyday player. But people think that because Maddon puts him in great spots and then he thrives and everybody thinks he should play every day. Unfortunately, Kyle Schwarber is great in certain scenarios and not in others. So they have to handle him a certain way. And I think that the Cubs might have given up on the notion that he's just a no-brainer. Put him in the lineup every day, even when there are right-handed hitters. It's too bad. And while we all stew and try to figure out Kyle Schwarber, I think the Cubs think that they have figured him out, and he's just not a guy who could play every day at this point.
Well,
wow.
I'm kind of.
I know. That's damning, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, the whole thing's kind of bums me out because Schwarber is, by all accounts, a good dude, and he is somebody that has worked really hard to get his body in shape and become an above-average outfielder, Mully, like you bring up. It doesn't seem like he could ever kind of get the stars to align, though, between his offense, where he was actually a super intimidating, you know, productive power hitter, but he was a joke in the outfield, and then last year, where he made himself into a pretty good left fielder, but the inconsistencies at the plate kind of reared their head. And now this year, he's trapped in a really bad funk, David. I think you brought up, 2 for 24
yeah.
over his last handful of games?
Pretty bad,
any way you spin it. And with Joe being a guy who likes to mix up the lineups and the Cubs being a team with a lot of depth, if you're struggling, it's going to be hard for you to get out there and get consistent playing time, whether you're Kyle Schwarber or you're David Bodie or you're Chris Bryant. I mean, you know, he's going to be going with the hot hand because he's got options. There's very few guys that are actually nailed onto that lineup consistently every day, you know, outside of like Anthony Rizzo. So, you know, there's still a lot left in Schwarber. I know that because we've seen it before. I don't think it just disappeared one day. And he will go through a stretch again where he gets hot and he's feared and he's hitting 450-foot home runs out onto Sheffield or Waveland, whichever way he chooses. But I think that we will have to just accept the inconsistency like Grody brought up. I think that might just be part and parcel of this kid.
Speaking of funk, Maddon's lineup without Schwarber in it yesterday might have been the funkiest play of the game yesterday. Air check, Ray.
Funk Away still a sponsor? I need some more of that for the car.
Absolutely.
I love the Funk Away. Mitch,
Funk Away. I don't get it. If he's not playing against that team, and I don't want to hear he needed another day off to clear his head. I mean, that's the mumbo jumbo we'd get if asked why he wasn't in there. It's disappointing. He's a good guy. Without that guy, they don't. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Without that guy, they do not win the World Series. Period. Okay. Period. If you're going to tell me that that was a better option last night in left field, the guy needs to get his confidence back up. Let him try. I mean, if you're not, he needs at bats. Then send him down. Right. I mean, are they in a position to send him down? I don't think so.
He's got options.
They can send him down.
Now coming to your Iowa Cubs, Ian Happ and Kyle Schwarber.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll play with the Chicago Dogs and hang out with Zambrano.
It's 2014 all over.
I don't think he could hit Zambrano right now.
Stop it.
Ouch.
It's the off-speed stuff that gets him.
It's a great question.
How much of Yoan Moncada's progress has to do with his move to third base?
Boy, I can't tell you what. I think it's a fun topic to talk about. And I get it. Like, he doesn't have to think a lot. The ball is just on top of him, and off he goes. But isn't more of his progress due to the fact that he's 23, that he's been in the major leagues? Isn't this just a guy adapting to the game of baseball, a guy that was a really good player and a highly touted prospect and then struggled a little bit and struck out a lot, and now he has his first multi-homer game? Is it really down to not thinking as much and moving him? I think he'd be doing just as well if he were at second. I don't think it's harmed him, the move, and maybe it's made it easier, but I think it's just timing in his career. I just think he's a young player that is figuring it out and was going to figure it out at the plate anyway. And I guess his defense is significantly better because he doesn't have to think things through. He just reacts and the ball's on top of him and all that stuff. And I just can't see the change of position as the reason. I think it's the maturity of the player. It could be a contributing factor, mm-hmm. but I think the main reason is just age and you know, being more experienced.
I think we're looking for reasons, so we want to attach cause effect to him moving to third base and seeing what he's doing at the plate, when in fact, you know, not to go, you know, football comparison with you, but I think we talk about, you know, with Mitch Trubisky, we don't really know what it looks like to see a quarterback develop into, you know, a starter and a plus player and a Pro Bowl type quarterback, because we've never seen it. We haven't seen a ton of guys develop, I guess, in baseball, and this is what you're seeing in terms of Yoan Moncada's development. This is, last year was part of it. You're going to struggle when you're thrust into a situation maybe before you're ready. Maybe the Sox did rush him. I don't know what it was. But there's no question that this year you're seeing the benefits of him failing last year. He's using that to learn from, and the success speaks for itself. So I think it's probably incidental that he's playing third base. I would like to think he'd still be making these strides at the plate offensively if he were still at second base, because this is who they thought they were getting when they made the big trade. This is the Yoan Moncada that people saw develop and be that guy. We just saw the development, and we, you know, this is a star in the making. This is a guy who's made so much progress, and now Fangraphs is writing about his plate discipline. So this is really good to see Yoan Moncada have this sort of moment, and you think it's just going to get better, but I don't think it has anything to do necessarily with him playing third base.
Yeah, I agree with that. This guy was the number one prospect in baseball because he was a viciously good swinger of the bat from both sides of the plate. And, you know, part of the reason he's better too, like, a ton of his strikeouts last year were of the looking variety, and I feel like you could tighten that up better than if you, who was swinging and missing at everything last year. So this guy is a pure hitter, and he's starting to show it right now. And then the other question I have too, like, is playing third base so simple, like, that is it really a no-brainer at the major league level
to play corner,
to play right to play, like, as if go to third base, you don't got to do a damn thing over there, just sit there and, you know, chew your sunflower seeds and enjoy life, like playing short center or something. Like, there's absolutely nothing going on. So you know, if you're playing on the dirt, if you're playing infield in Major League Baseball, there's always something to think about, and there's always a mental game going on. Outfield may be a little bit different, but I still think that playing third base, there is a relatively high degree of difficulty there. And in some ways harder because of the throw that has to be made. Yeah, I get it. You're involved more at second base. But, yeah, I don't think that playing third base has anything to do with it. I think this is just a player starting to come of age.
Well, just in terms of aesthetically, the optics, if you will, he looks more like a third baseman because he's kind of a big dude. He does have the strong arm. He's more of an imposing figure over at the hot corner, if you will. But I don't know.
Sweet headband, too.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy, great hair. I don't know that the positional move really did have anything to do with this. I think that was more of an issue of we have Nick Madrigal coming up in the minors. Hopefully he'll be up, if not August, September this year, then certainly in 2020 he'll have a shot to make the team. More of a natural middle infielder. I mean, Moncada also, before he came over to Chicago, I think he was a shortstop with the Red Sox organization. So they kind of moved him around a little bit. And if he, for whatever reason, if it's happenstance, if it's coincidence, and he just happens to keep hitting the way that he's hitting here, and it's happening at third base, then just keep it going. Don't change anything up. And you bring up that FanGraphs article, David. I was looking up a little bit of his advanced metrics, Dustin. I'm sure you'd be thrilled. His walk rate is...
I'll get you some Kleenex. Hold on.
His walk rate is half of what it was last season, but his isolated power is tripled. So if he's hitting the crap out of the ball and he's driving the ball, he's hitting home runs, he's hitting doubles,
Kleenex isn't for that.
He doesn't have to walk as much. But he will eventually because guys are going to start to pitch him differently as he goes on this year, and that's when the good patience and the batter's eye will come back around. I'm really, really happy to see him doing what he's been doing. It's fantastic.
Sounds like you're happy. Here's
a little
the
too
take.
Happy.
He may be a little too happy. Let that breathe for a second. I think it's got everything to do.
Hi, Dustin.
Everything. Hi, Mark. Bears. Everything to do with it. I said this earlier this year, probably spring training. I think it is the third base is a less thinking man's position, right? Ball, to your point, Mully, ball gets to you really quick. To Kevin, your point, he's built more like a third baseman than a second baseman. Got everything to do with it. He's not thinking about it. Doesn't have to worry about getting the throw. Doesn't have to worry about his feet, making the shuffle, making the exchange, getting it to first base. Probably way more shifting, right, at second base. People don't steal third primarily. They steal what? They steal second base. So I think it's got almost everything to do with it. The talent, he didn't just all of a sudden wake up at 35th and Shields and be like, oh, I know how to hit. Oh, geez. Because he had other things on his mind. So I think this has everything to do with his success so far this season.
I'm so happy you asked that question.
Is Porter Moser nuts? What would it take to get you to move to New York? And will Moser regret his decision to stay?
Well, we'll ask him that when he appears with us at 8:20 because those are all very good questions. So it's Monday and Porter Moser's in New York City and he walks into Madison Square Garden for the tour and his likeness and his image is on the big screen and they're talking to him about how he can turn this program around. And he told me that at that moment he felt chills and he felt excited about the possibility of coaching at St. John's and the opportunity in the Big East. And then he thought about it some more and then he thought about it some more and he just couldn't leave. 8 years, $18 million is a lot of security to walk away from. Is he nuts? He's probably a little nuts. And when you look at, you know, professionally, you can convince yourself that he is nuts. But personally, that is more important. And you're never going to make a decision you regret if you put your family first. And in this case, Porter Moser put his family first and he put the Loyola family first. And I applaud him for doing what is the difficult thing because everybody in the business that he talked to was telling him, you got to take this job. You got to take this job. You can't win at Loyola. You got to get to the Big East. That's the next logical step. And he was tempted, and it was very seductive to see these things happen. You know, when you see your likeness at Madison Square Garden, a place referred to as the Mecca, that can be very convincing and persuasive. And he said no. And what would it take to get me to move to New York? I don't know what it would take to get me to move to New York. I'm not a big New York fan, but it wasn't enough for Porter Moser to leave, and Loyola is lucky to have him.
I would honestly say that. Maybe when I was a younger man, New York would have been a place I'd love to have gone and lived. And I believe I may have applied for a job or two in New York back in the day Thought I was leaving town. Didn't know that I was George Bailey, much like much like Porter Moser. But now at a different stage in my life,
very interesting situation.
A man doesn't find himself in a situation like this every day.
Your money's at Fred's house, not at Jim's
Bedford
house.
Falls.
You once called me a warped, frustrated old man.
And a happy new year to you in jail.
In jail. It's good any time of the year.
For a second, Grody,
come
I thought
on,
that
David,
was.
You got to quote it too.
I thought that was Lou Piniella checking
in. It is a little bit Lou. It is a little bit Lou.
But I, you know, look, there's a lure to New York. I think without question, if you're a basketball aficionado, you must go to the Garden and see basketball in the Garden. It's amazing. It really is a wonderful place to go to watch an NBA game for sure. But. I think they have so many different tournaments there. You should just, if you're ever in New York, try to get yourself to a basketball game. And Broadway. That's fantastic, too. I don't think Porter will regret his decision because I think you're right, David. I think the decision was made because of his family. And, you know, contentment is something that is a blessing in life. And if you are, if your children are happy and your children feel like they're in a good spot and your wife is happy and you've got a lot going for you. I mean, Porter has like a nice commute to work. Simple things that make your life a lot easier. And, you know, when you're a basketball coach, when you're in the profession of coaching, your family is around you a lot. They are around your program. They're around everything that you do. And it's a wonderful thing. You see a lot of, you know, one of the reasons – I don't think it's pure nepotism. I think one of the reasons that that coaches breed coaches is because their kids are around the game from a very young age, and Porter's a family man, and that's a big priority. I just wonder if you really think about how you live in New York, even with that kind of money. You know, it's really hard to get a big house in Manhattan. Period. End of story. So now you're commuting from where? Right? You're going to live in New Jersey. Who wants to do that? So you're in Connecticut, you're taking a train in, or you're getting massive speeding tickets, David Letterman. It's just a really difficult lifestyle if you're not living near the school, in the area, all that stuff. I think Porter's from Chicago, his recruiting connections. I think it takes a lot of self-knowledge to understand what works for you. And the guy's loves his situation, and I'm sure the lure of that was very difficult to fight off. But when you really stop and you talk about it and you talk to your family and all the rest of it, that's what's important.
And here's the other part. He is still making, and I get it, compared to 8 years, $18 million. He's still rich. He's making $800,000 a year. You know what I mean? Like, he's
well, see, now you're shortchanging. We had this debate yesterday, Mark. Now I think you're
it's just under a million. It's like 970 or so.
1.4 million to 800,000.
His point stands, though.
There are no GoFundMe pages for Porter Moser, right?
He's a high six figure salary guy in Chicago, and living in Chicago, not a horrible consolation prize in this case. So. Yeah, I look at that, and his quality of life is terrific, probably, based on all that. You could add in all the and there's one other part, too. Loyola's got to be winking at him and just kind of saying, we're not going to give you 8 years and $18 million, but we'll take care of you. We'll get, you know.
Mark, they're doing more than winking.
Yeah.
They're hugging.
That's a done deal.
Yeah.
Right. So really, when you add that in, he's rich now. He's going to get richer. Loyola's going to take care of him. Maybe the facilities get even better. Like, they can, like, they do the Pat Fitzgerald thing where they get all the peripheral stuff, they make it better, and they continue to grow and turn it into something. I think that's probably what his bosses are saying, and that's what he knows. And I think that this was just a really perfect play by Porter Moser to have interviewed for this job, to get offered the job, and say, there you go. That's all I needed to do. Now I want to stay in Chicago. I want to be at Loyola. Take care of me.
Well, my first thought was that, yes, Porter was indeed nuts to turn down this contract, but there is something to be said about, you know, familiarity and kind of staying where you're from, and he's got a life here. His kids are going to school here. He's entrenched now, not only within the Loyola community, but Chicago and this area in general in terms of college basketball. They are kind of crazy, but they're like the marquee program within the city now at this point after the Final Four run and all the publicity they had coming off of that. So it, in my mind, yeah, it's nuts. I would move to New York tomorrow if they gave me like $1 more than I'm making right now. I would get on the next train or the next plane and be out of here. And
Mitch, can we make that happen?
And never see any of you guys ever again. But hey, all due respect to Porter, and I'm looking forward to hear what he has to say about it later on the show today.
820.
He's been a lot of fun to work with from my perspective coming on the show for the last couple of years. I'm happy he's staying. I love the idea for me being a meatball. He basically gave two middle fingers to New York, and he thought about it, and it's tempting and all of that. I wouldn't live in New York for $25,000 more a year, okay? So, Kevin, don't even ask because it's not going to happen.
They would eat you alive out there.
I am so not New York. And Kevin's right. I'm so not New York. So keep it. I was surprised, though. I texted with a couple of our college basketball insiders. You could probably figure out if you're a fan of the show who those people were.
Eli.
And they both thought... No, Eli was on the show. We had Simba. We had Simba on, and Simba told us what he thought about it.
And he even wrote it for 670score.com.
Right. That guy.
Right. They both thought that he should and would take it, that the money would be too hard to pass up, and that he would actually be a good fit out there. So I thought when all this was going on, damn, Porter's leaving. So I'm happy for the kids. I'm happy for Loyola. It's a good story. And don't be surprised in maybe 2 years from now if there's another school around this neck of the woods that he might be coaching, and it's not DePaul. I'll leave it at that.
A little further north.
I mean, that's a pretty general question.
Are you saddened by Zach Miller's retirement, and is any part of you relieved?
Boy, I got to tell you, if it wasn't for Zach walking in with Mitch as often as he did during the regular season, it seemed like he was kind of coming into games with him. I had actually forgotten he was on the team. And as I was kind of looking over their draft needs and making little notes to myself, I thought, you know, you can never have enough tight ends. And I didn't even have him on my radar when, as I looked at the roster and saw he was on the injured list. The guy had a catastrophic injury, and it ended his career. And it's interesting to hear him say he's lucky that he can walk. I don't know if relieved is the right word, but I think that players have to come to a realization. I think he probably knew that he wasn't going to be able to return from that injury. He's had how many surgeries? 9 surgeries in the last 18 months, something like that. I think it's great that he could rehab and be there, but it's rough, man. It is a really strange environment in the NFL when you have a player with an injury. It's difficult for players to see players who are injured because it's a reminder of injury. You talk to players who have been injured and have spent time near the team. It's a very uncomfortable feeling for them. So I feel really bad that this has happened to him. But at the same point, I think that the time it's almost a step of realization that it's not going to it's not something he's going to be able to come back from.
So, it was gruesome. It was grotesque. Gruesome.
Yes.
It was regrettable. It was memorable.
Horrible.
It was also October 29th, 2017. It was a long time ago. And Zach Miller is a consummate professional, a very likable guy. He's going to be very good at whatever he does in the next phase of his life. But let's put some things in perspective here. This isn't Gronk leaving the Patriots. This is a guy that played here in 33 games, 28 starts, 101 receptions, 11 touchdowns. And we're giving him the Gronk treatment. I get it. He's been around for a while, and he is definitely as friendly as anybody ever has been at Hallis Hall to the sports media in town. And I think that probably contributes to a little bit why, you know, he has gotten the attention that he has gotten over the last year while he has hung around, and the Bears have, you know, treated him like a legitimate roster guy on the roster. But this is the end that all NFL players face inevitably. And Zach Miller was a pretty good Bear, a better guy than he was a player. And I think the question is, Are you saddened by Zach Miller's retirement? I was saddened when he went down in New Orleans, and that was the type of injury that he suffered. That was difficult to watch and for him to get past. And is any part of you relieved? That may not be the right word, but this is not somebody that I was like sitting around wondering if he's going to retire this year. Yesterday's news came as a reminder that he was actually still being paid.
I remember him standing up there last year at the podium and talking about how, you know, he almost had to have his leg amputated and all this legitimately gruesome stuff. And then in the same breath saying, yeah, I might try to play again.
Right.
I'm like, oh,
really?
What? Does your and my honestly, my first reaction was, does your family know about this? Like, do they realize you're thinking about playing the most physical sport that exists in this world where maybe this time you'll have to get your leg amputated? So this was obviously the most gruesome of his injuries, but it was year after year with Zach Miller. Like, every year he was rehabbing from something.
Even when he was healthy, he wasn't ever really healthy.
Right. It was always something just devastating. Like, a guy like that has to be and I like the fact that he's got it in him to want to come back and rehab and all that kind of stuff, but for the sake of your life, and if you don't care about yourself, then care about your family. So part of me is relieved about this.
I wouldn't say that I'm relieved
or saddened.
I absolutely.
The Bears are going to play on Thanksgiving morning at 11 a.m. You'll find out tonight, but that's the word. Go ahead.
2 years in a row.
Good. I like those games.
So much for my Thanksgiving.
Can Manley and I do the pregame again like we did last year? Grody, you came on the
awesome.
Show, right?
Yeah, it was great. It was great. I don't remember the questions. I don't remember the answers.
It's just, it's not about that. It's about
maybe
love
guys
and it's about togetherness.
Maybe you guys could do 5-5 or something.
5-5.
It's about being thankful for one Mark Grody.
Yeah.
I don't really give a rip, to quote John Fox, about Zach Miller retiring. I will say, though, that the play in which he broke his leg, on which he broke his leg, he got screwed over on that because that was a touchdown all day.
It was.
And that was the main thing that stuck with me throughout this entire fiasco is that they should have won that damn game against the Saints.
I thought you were going to talk about his hair. You want to talk about a guy who's got a great head of hair.
See, no, that's a cliche. That's a trite, overdone haircut at this point in the game. I think he's got to mix
like
it up.
He's a poser.
He's got to go blonde. Is that what we're talking about?
I wouldn't quite say that. You know, it's not for everybody, but it's just that.
You could do that hairdo.
Yeah, I would have done it 3 years ago, maybe.
Oh, okay. So the hairdo has jumped the shark. I feel bad for him. He could have done more, but I agree. I think he'll be successful in whatever he chooses after football.
All righty. That's it, Dustin?
Okay. Well, it's 6 o'clock, Mully.
All right,
Mitch
buddy.
Likes us to keep a tight
312-644-6767. I just have never seen you edit yourself in that fashion before.
Radio without, professional.
Without being interrupted. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Channel 670.
That was good.
Score.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.